The Next CMO podcast explores topics that are on the minds of forward-thinking marketing executives, from leadership and strategy to emerging technologies. And we bring these topics to life by interviewing leading experts in their fields. The Next CMO is sponsored by Plana, makers of the world's first AI-based marketing leadership platform, and hosted by me, Peter Mahoney, the founder and CEO of Plana, along with my co-host, Kelsey Kraft. In this episode of the Next CMO podcast, Kelsey and I speak with Julius Solaris, the VP of Marketing Strategy and Events at Hopin, the fastest growing European company of all time. Julius is a deep expert when it comes to events and the event world in general. He was previously the founder and editor-in-chief of EventMB, which he started in 2007. He's been named one of the most influential individuals in the meetings industry by many magazines and media for the past 10 years. And in 2020, his online events have been attended by over 60,000 event professionals. So this is a guy with serious experience. Julius walks through the future of events all the way from physical to hybrid to virtual and all the way into the metaverse. He helps us understand what we should be thinking about as we plan for experiences with our customers for this year and into the future. I hope you enjoy the show.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Julius. We're super excited to have you on the Next CMO podcast. You're our first guest of the new year. Would love to learn a little bit more about you and what you do at Hopin.
Thank you so much for having me. Very excited to be your first guest of the year. And yeah, I love events. Events are my life. I started quite young and I've been traditionally in media. I founded a company called EventMB, which I sold in 2019. I've been an editor. I've done a lot of research on the use of technology in events since early days, especially the use of social media. And believe it or not, my top trend that I would write every year that I wrote in 2019 for 2020 was virtual events, without knowing obviously what would have happened in 2020. I've been a fan of virtual events and the use of technology to extend the reach of events forever. And I guess I made the jump, as a lot of people say, to the dark side, which is the tech side. So I moved from media to tech, which is actually something that is happening quite a lot in the event industry these days. And now I joined Hopin 3 months ago, fastest growing company in Europe of all time. So very exciting environment. You know, we're very excited to bring events closer to everybody. And yeah, that's our mission.
That's great. Actually, you might say you didn't take the jump, but you took the hop to Hopin, right? Isn't that the way that it should be?
That's it.
Absolutely. And Hopin has been an incredible story that we've all been following. In the growth obviously has been fueled by the pandemic. But obviously, as you were saying, and maybe you were prescient, but at the same time, I think you were probably reporting out what was going on in the industry. I think there was going to be a massive change going on anyway. When it came to events, it felt like it was ready for disruption. Do you think that's where we were? Were we at this point where we were going to see this major push towards remote and virtual anyway, regardless of the pandemic?
Listen, I've been talking about the use of technology in events for 15 years. So literally from where I was talking by myself and nobody was listening, because, you know, it's the most counterintuitive type of environment. You don't join events because you like technology. You join events because you like people and the offline world. But like with time and with the rise of experiences, we've noted that a lot of those companies that rely on events, whether it's a marketing tool or it's their core product, they need to scale. And you can't scale without technology these days, whether it's the back end operationally or it's the front end in terms of reaching out to more people. Therefore, we've seen the evolution of the use of tech in events. We've seen new roles coming up, such as the event technologist, which is someone in between AV and the production level that understands the use of technology. But obviously, nobody could anticipate what happened in 2020. That push in the market was incredible. on the user side and on the tech side as well. I like to say that we've seen more progress in terms of the development of technology tools in the past 20 months than in the past 20 years. And I believe that's the case with the way platform have evolved. It's incredible, the speed, but also the adoption. Obviously, that was driven by the adoption. Hopin was founded in 2019, in the summer of 2019. So it is obviously, there's a big component of the pandemic played in that. But then again, like there's a number of tools that do that. So there's got to be something special about it in the way Hopin was conceived that made it incredibly popular.
I think it would be really beneficial because I know a few people talk about this pretty often of, you know, hybrid versus virtual events. Can you describe to our audience about what that difference is?
So at Hopin, we try to be as inclusive as possible with the definitions, because what we've seen in the past year and a half or so is that there's never been such a fluid definition of what events are to different people. We used to think of events as like, you know, a venue, people showing up in person, maybe some form of live streaming of sorts. And that was that. These days, we've seen like the most incredible creative definition of events we've ever seen in terms of the use of tools like Hopin, but also StreamYard in terms of live streaming, which is part of the company, or pre-recorded video, and a combination of all these elements to create these immersive experiences regardless of where you are. So, but it's important to make, there are some differences. Virtual events, we like to think about those where they're purely happening online. So therefore, the audiences and the performers are meeting online. There's like we're doing right now on video. This could be a mini virtual event that we're having right now, even if it's like postponed. So there's not necessarily regulations and rules in terms of when it needs to happen, but it's happening online. A hybrid event is where there's a component of online and a component of offline. One important difference, though, that we're trying to be as inclusive as possible in this definition, they do not necessarily need to happen at the same time. So that's a different way of looking at hybrid events. So we like to think of hybrid events as we're having an event online, offline, it's being streamed online, the two audiences are interacting in some way. Yes, I mean, that could be the case, but it could also be the case that we're having an event offline, we're recording it, live streaming it in a community later, in a platform later, a week later, 2 weeks later, and get interaction there with speakers maybe joining live there. So it's a very fluid concept, but we like to think of an offline and online component.
That's a great definition and very inclusive in terms of what those two differences are. I guess coming from HubSpot, I was a former HubSpotter, I know very well about inbound, right? And in 2020, they had to make that massive change to make inbound interactive. You know, 20,000 people attend this event. Talk to us a little bit about what that interaction looks like and also how to gain that proper audience.
Absolutely. You know, engagement, you know, interaction as a subset of engagement. We like to think of engagement as the sort of overarching concept that drives all events in general. And the biggest problem that event planners have had traditionally before the pandemic and after the pandemic. So it's not a problem that started with Zoom or, you know, platforms in general online or virtual meetings platforms. The problem with engagement was well before the pandemic. We experienced it, you know, whenever we were at a conference looking at a 10-point font presentation sales pitch, we were like, oh, please kill me now. I can't deal with this, right? So low engagement levels were traditionally the issue, right? And that seems to keep on going with virtual events. So not a problem with the medium at all. Definitely a problem with the design of events and how we think about our events. There is a role that platforms do play into the engagement problem, right? And I think, this is my theory, I have to validate it with our CEO, but this is my theory, that most of the success that Hopin had early days was because the way the product was conceived was really thinking about the engagement piece quite a lot. One of the features that I really love about the platform is this ability to network and like be randomly assigned to someone, like almost like a roulette type of system to network with someone. And that mimics what we call the liminality of events, right? What everybody misses about events is not sitting in a room, in a dark room for an hour and a half listening to someone what we miss is that conversation that is happening at the coffee break, right? That serendipitous meeting we can have right there. And some platforms like Hopin, but many others as well, are achieving that by introducing like that unexpected twist in the platform. So therefore, engagement is very well linked to that serendipitous encounter of something unexpected. We have to be clever in the way we do it though online.
So there are two interesting sides of this equation that you brought up, Julius, in this discussion. One is this very serendipitous part of the interaction that you have. But the other thing that you teased a little bit with the idea of talking about performers as part of the content. And there has to be a piece of that. And I think the missing element in a lot of experiential marketing, whether it's a live event or a virtual or a hybrid or whatever it is the idea of creating something that's a great experience. And great experience requires creativity, it requires writing, it requires performing, it's all those things. And do you find that it is a different kind of skill to write, to produce, to perform an event in this kind of an environment versus more of a traditional physical world environment?
That's a fantastic question. Absolutely not, in the sense that it's not something new that we haven't seen before. The easiest comparison that I make all the time is, you know, you go to the stadium and watch the Super Bowl. You're ready for a certain type of experience, probably the most epic tailgating you're going to do in your life, as well as the most incredible in-person show you will see. But you watch the Super Bowl on TV, completely different experience, doesn't have to be the same, yet still valuable, meeting with family and friends, having fun, having a few drinks, watching the ads, watching the replays, completely different experience there, but equally valuable. So the lack of what we've seen, especially at the beginning of the pandemic, we've seen it evolving right now in terms of marketing professionals and event professionals getting better at it with time, doing this incredible crash course in the space of a few months. It's been the ability to translate in-person experiences to online. That doesn't work. So if you're trying to do the same thing, it's not going to work. On the other end, we quickly came to the realization that what we should strive for is to really achieve that level of production that resembles more of a TV show, especially where content is involved, right? Where it's engaging and interacting and fast, and the times are like, you know, completely different to the stage. And I want to introduce something extremely exciting that is happening right now to the stage where virtual events are almost changing the rule, the playbook of in-person events. Because we've seen now, going back to in-person, that sessions are being redesigned in a shorter format. You never sit in a one-hour keynote anymore, right? It's 20 minutes, 30 minutes, you got to move on to the next thing. And that's kind of the impact that virtual is having on in-person as well in terms of the design, but aiming and striving to be as TV-like as possible. And once again, when we talk about events, it's very difficult because there's the 200 people event and there's the 200,000 people event. So it's a completely different proposition and budgets and sets of tools available.
You brought up so many good points. And I read a post that you had done regarding your 7 a.m. meetings. And I know some of the listeners may fall out of their seat right now on the idea of that. But, you know, the short segments, the TV-like approach. Talk to us a little bit more about kind of how you keep that engagement and what those 7 a.m. meetings look like so people can bring it to their event strategy.
Oh my God, no, I'm so happy you bring that up because it's like one of my favorite topics. You know, when I joined Hopin, global company, all remote, we have no offices spread all over the world, 40 plus countries. So there needs to be a way to come together at some stage. I mean, Slack is great, whatever. We need to come together. And like, what better opportunity to use our platform to do that, right? Walking the walk. And so as soon as I joined during my onboarding, I see, you know, all the fixed calendar invites that you see there. And on a Friday at 7 a.m., you know, there's the all hands meeting. And I'm like, oh my God, like what is going to happen to my life? I'm not going to be able to function at that time of the day. And all of a sudden I get sort of sucked into this incredible experience that our internal events team has created for us. It's just like something like I had FOMO during the holidays. I really wanted to go back and what is happening? Why are we not having that? Because it's kind of like a great way to wrap up the whatever it's happening during the week. But it's a moment for everybody to come together. Yes, it's wildly entertaining. And they're like, we have proper hosts and we have music and we have competition and we have, you know, it's so fast and like everybody moves super quickly. And the CEO is always there. It's always opening it. It's not like, you know, he's too cool for school, you know, and there's always, you know, something new competition or talent, whatever, a contest. There's always something happening. It's fast. It moves quickly. It gives you the information you need. It's digestible. At the beginning, there's music. We dance. We do crazy gifts in the chat. You know, there's always comments brought up online as well using stream. So there's a lot of participation. Everybody feels energized after that. There's no long presentations. Everybody from different teams is brought on board. And, you know, I simply love it. I mean, it's just quick and it works. And then I'm every Friday morning at 7 a.m. I'm like, let's go. Let's make it. Can't wait to do it.
So Julius, we have to make this relatable for people because I think you just scared the heck out of a bunch of people saying, oh my God, now we have to be like a, you know, like a late night TV show production kind of capable organization to have our team meetings every week. And it's interesting because I thought about the concept as you were describing that environment of a lot of people are saying now that tech companies are actually becoming media companies. I mean, you were saying you went from media and hopped in to hop in to the tech side, but the reality is tech companies are becoming media companies largely because they need to produce high quality content at this level. And it makes me think about the skills that are required inside a marketing organization. Again, our audience, we got a bunch of CMOs. How should they think about the kinds of skills they should be building in their teams to create the kind of experiences of the future? Are there people and skills that don't exist in most companies that they should be thinking about hiring or training people for new capabilities?
That's an awesome question. I love to be challenged on that. I believe that first off, we have to start with the realization. The realization is that things are changing and like they are. And we believe that at Hopin. Like we are embracing that 100%, right? In this remote cultural type of shift where we're projecting into obviously virtual and connecting people online wherever they are, being as inclusive as possible. So there's a strong buy-in from the top. And you can't do any of this without that. I believe that, you know, if you're trying to kind of achieve that TV show type of feeling, excitement type of feeling without top management buy-in, it's going to be cheesy. It's going to be cringe. Nobody's going to love it. And it's going to show very quickly. On the other end, if everybody's sold to do things differently, the amazing thing is that you have the tools to do that. I'm not just talking about Hopin. I mean, to be honest, you can get Hopin for free. You can get StreamYard for free and you're set. That's the tools we use. We don't use anything else. Like, you know, that's essentially, and that's the amazing thing. Like we have tools available today that we've been craving for in the past 10 years or so. They were so expensive, so unavailable, but now you have them. So, but then it becomes a problem about the content and how you shape that. So there's always talent in the company of people that do an incredible job. We have some people on our marketing team that are natural performers. Like you can tell them about how they use Slack, right? So if you're able to spot those trends and those abilities, those skills in people in terms of their communication patterns and the ability to express joy and excitement and that feeling of a team, I believe that exposing those people to the rest of the company is just going to make wonders for you. And, you know, try to also cut back on all the things that we say they're boring, but we keep on doing, right? And that's a problem. Like if you want to really embrace whatever's new, like let go of those presentations for 20 minutes of bullet points. Like we all know we're going to disconnect after 2 minutes. We're remote. I have my phone. I have my computer here next to me. I'm just going to be distracted in a second. So don't assume that because you put mandatory in the calendar invite, you're going to have my attention. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, clearly we're dealing with the TikTok generation, right? Where you have the attention span of a goldfish for a lot of people I'm going to challenge you a little bit on this because not every company has people who have those kind of skill and that kind of talent. That's special to be able to be engaging. And it's the reason why there are hundreds of millions of people on TikTok, but a few thousand that take up the vast majority of the content watched in any platform. So if you want to be a standout in this capability, do you need to go hire a Charlie DeMillo, or do you need to go create your own internal capability to have really compelling content? Do you need to go hire someone who's the Harvard Lampoon editor and recruit those people? So what are the kind of skills, if you want to be really remarkable in the future, that you should be looking for?
I mean, you said it, Peter. Companies are moving into becoming media companies, right? That's becoming the marketing almost. The media is becoming the marketing. There's a reason why Hopin hired, you know, an editor-in-chief right now as VP of marketing as well, right? I come from a media back. I've been doing virtual events for 60,000 event planners last year. So we have a lot of experience in that sense. So maybe recruiting is changing. Maybe the set of skills that we're looking at in this remote world are slightly different. Maybe it's also about mining for those skills within our existing audience a little bit more, our existing team. And, but yeah, I mean, we should look out for that. Should we call out to celebrities? Should we call out for guest speakers that are incredible, you know, performers and known for that? Yes or no? Because, you know, a top high-end speaker will show up and do their thing. That's it. They'll move on to the next event. So building those skills internally, I believe, is the new internal communication sort of pathway. I'm not an internal comms expert, but I can tell you the impact of that for marketing, for sure. A change in the conversation, it's needed right now. People spot you like 100 miles away if you're like sort of doing a campaign on Twitter. You know what I mean? Like you're posting a link. It feels cheesy. Doesn't feel real. So that level of connection, like everybody's like, cut the BS and let's move to what counts. And I guess if you can recruit with that in mind, things are going to get much easier for you.
So one thing I want to bring up is 60,000 attendees is pretty impressive. Just want to make sure our listeners heard that. Peter, that may be our new goal for our webinars in the near future, or our events, I should say. But one thing that's really difficult besides, you know, the attendees is actually measuring the success of your events. So talk to us about how you look at that ROI, especially for these massive events that you're running on both a hybrid and virtual scale.
Absolutely. There's been a traditional talk about ROI in events. Events have been the most intangible of tools in your marketing sort of strategy, usually tool set. Everybody loves events, right? If you had gone like in 2019 and look at B2B marketing, for example, see like what's the top performing tool, what's the top most loved tool, events. Why? Not sure. Like, how do you measure an event, right? And it's like a lot of high fives and like, oh, we loved it. It was a great event. Yeah, but I need a little bit more than that, right? To justify it to my business. So traditionally, the problem with in-person has been that what technology adds is a layer of tangibility to a very intense matter. So technology has always traditionally helped in-person and online to give you more data, right? And being able to understand what's working, what's not. Obviously, in-person, a little bit more difficult, a little bit more complex because there's a lot of logistics in place, right? Especially if we talk about some of the technology, I'm going to get a little bit nerdy here, but things like, you know, BLE and Bluetooth and like enable beacons to track people moving into specific areas. So companies were moving towards that pre-pandemic, still happening. We have some of that technology with the RFID in our own tool set as well for in-person. So, you know, there's a lot of movement, but, you know, it's not as easy as in a virtual environment. All of a sudden, since March 2020, event planners all of a sudden are realizing things that they never knew about their events. Like they never knew, like you had a sort of an idea that some things worked, but like you were relying to a feedback form sent like a week after the event to those 5% that would bother to answer it. All of a sudden, now everything is real time. You can know exactly who's going where, what sessions are most popular. So the amount of data available, 85% of our customers check the analytics of their events constantly. So that's probably the biggest shift that we've seen in ROI. And it's very easy for your audience, for CMOs, wannabe CMOs, or those that are practicing in marketing to understand, you know, that whenever we enter a virtual environment, accountability starts. So what success looks like for you? Is that the number of leads you're able to generate for your exhibitors? Is that the engagement you have with a specific session? But also, I want to introduce a new dimension. Events have always been struggling with the fact that, you know, CES is happening here in Vegas next week. Comes, goes, that's it. Hype is gone, right? And you do all this work, you have to reinvent the wheel every time. Now, what's happening with virtual event platforms is that it's creating a community and it's creating like a long-lasting impact for your event that goes beyond the 2-3 days of your conferences. And actually, what we like to call a hybrid event strategy as opposed to a hybrid event. So a combination of virtual, in-person, maybe concurrent synchronous hybrid, if you want to do that, but like different touch points through the year to maximize the ROI, because that opens up new avenue for all the marketers to introduce products, to introduce placements, to introduce content within these community platforms. At Hopin, we're pretty much dedicated to that vision.
Well, it's really interesting because one of the things that I was thinking about as we were prepping for this is the idea that there's a different level of investment that you need to make when you're creating an event that's especially a hybrid event. So a hybrid event, it's almost like you're doing it maybe not twice, but maybe once and a half, right? You go to your Super Bowl analogy, you're going to have the on-site production people, and then you're going to have the TV production people, and it's different stuff. And you need to slice and dice and sort of manage those experiences. But there are two factors that I think go back to Kelsey's point about the return on investment. There are two factors that I think more than make up for the incremental cost. So I'm selling for you here. So tell me if I'm wrong in a second. Yes. One is that, of course, you've got the longevity of the content. You've got the ability to turn a tactic into a long-term campaign. You can merchandise the packaged content and use it over and over and over again, and even do things like build communities. The other thing is that you get a dramatic increase in audience reach for the event. So think about even a giant event like CES, where you might have hundreds of thousands of people show up in person. You can have millions of people participate for a session remotely by doing that. So those two factors seem to really drive the economic decision around whether you extend your event from being just a physical or just a virtual to a true hybrid experience. Is that the right way to think about it, Julius?
You got it 100%. I mean, my work here is done. I can move on. That's a perfect answer, actually, I would have given. There's a lot of components to that. If you thought about an in-person event pre-pandemic, how would you keep your audience engaged through the year? Social media, right? So social media keeps the attention high, but one way form of communication. Yeah, I mean, with comments and all of that, but is it as participative as we want it to be? That's the thing. With virtual events, we've added an extra layer on top of social media to create more intimate, close experiences through the year with our own community. They're actually highly interactive, where the community can chat, they can network with each other, they can discover more about the products that the community has or the sponsors that want to support that community. So there's more layers than just that social media interaction that is very transactional these days. I mean, as much as we like to think that we spend a lot of time on social, we're still like scrolling and scrolling and scrolling with, you know, lesser amounts of attention. Therefore, the new layer of virtual is adding a much closer, that's why our motto for the companies feel closer, much closer way of connecting to people and we nurture that community on a monthly basis, on a weekly basis, and then that excitement, that frustration. So let me tell you a little story, and I'm going to cut off myself. When I started to talk about events in 2009, everybody was scared about the impact of social media on events, and Twitter specifically. Everybody thought that Twitter would cannibalize events to the stage that you would just witness an event on Twitter. We didn't know what was going to happen, right? Instead of showing up to in person. But what happened was exactly the opposite. We noticed that the more interactions were happening on social media, the more FOMO was building. And that frustration of connecting online has to be relieved in some way offline as well, right? And that's the whole paradigm of virtual events, I believe. The more you build that excitement and frustration in air quotes within your community, the more people will want to come and meet in person to your premium in-person experience, right? Which is not going to be for everybody for some time. We know that. It's not as easy, right? It's not going to be as frequent, but it's going to be the culmination of that need to meet in person. Look at the gaming communities. All the event venues that are being built right now in Vegas are for the gaming communities, like a stadium, Sphere form, right? Made for gaming. And this is people that spend their lives online most of the time, but like they need the biggest venues because they want to meet so bad.
Yeah, they got to get out of their mom's basement, I think, is the trick. Yeah, it exactly. So tell me where you think 3 to 5 years out, get your crystal ball, where is this all going? Do you think the experience world is going to be similar to what we're doing today, or is it, are we going to be pushing the envelope even more?
So I believe we're still going through probably 1 or 2 years where we're still sort of assessing what's going on. To be honest, there's going to be still some adjustment to the situation has changed. Like everybody thought we were back to normal before Omicron said, hold my beer, right? So I think we're kind of, you know, living day by day, month by month in the events world. It's incredible, to be honest. Let me make a note here to the resilience of people that are committed to in-person events. This is just unbelievable. I mean, I come from in-person. As much as I love technology, I love to meet in person. That's my world. That's my people. And I'm just like incredibly in awe by you know, the way they have to go through cancellations again and again. But like, aside from that, I feel that a lot of industries, we're seeing that, like media, tech, they're like, why should I bother to travel all over the world to go somewhere for like a day for a meeting that can happen online? So, right, this event could have been a virtual event, right? As this meeting could have been an email kind of comparison there. So that we're going to hear more of that. So second, I think that sustainability is going to have an impact, right? So there's a lot of pressure to cut the waste and emissions generated by in-person events. So trade show industry, one of the waste-producing industries in the world. So be aware of that. It's not a sustainable business. Therefore, virtual events are a direct answer to that. They're inclusive. I think that March 2020 onwards has been the biggest advertisement we've had to the event industry in general and events as a tool. Everybody was able to access events you had to pay and travel for. So all of a sudden, everything for free, incredible value. Everybody's excited about that. So we can't deny that level of inclusion anymore. I think people are going to say, like, why are you excluding me all of a sudden? What was that? Was it a trick? So that's another point. And I also believe that at the end of the day, we're going to value much more in person. As a result, I feel that those experiences that will happen in person will be finally game-changing for us. So a lot of fat is going to be trimmed in a sense that wishy-washy sort of vanilla type of events are going to go. It was right about time that they went, to be honest, because, you know, we couldn't deal with that. So, yeah, I'm all for that. That's the change we've been advocating for years, and it's finally happening. And it's not an easy one, but it's an exciting one for sure. A lot of people have to reinvent themselves, reskill themselves. It's a new tool. It's a new category available for all the CMOs right there. You know, it's more complex. Don't think you know virtual events. Because even if you knew them like a year ago, completely different set of tools these days. So keep yourself informed on that.
So what do you think about the analogy that you made at the beginning of the conversation about the Super Bowl? Made me think about how different that is in some ways for how virtual events work today. So virtual events today are not local parties. They're me sitting by myself in front of my computer. It's a very isolated kind of experience. Do you think we're going to see more and more events that are sort of a collection of groups of people? So more connecting local events into a broader global event and maybe having sort of tiers of participation? Because I still don't think, I haven't seen a great experience created where I can have my Super Bowl watching party, where I have everyone together. It's all designed for a single user looking at a single screen. Do you see this ability to bring groups of people together to maybe participate and discuss content in a little salon that's part of a spin-off of a larger event, as an example?
That's a fantastic question, and it's something that a lot of planners themselves like kind of overlook. So congratulations for the level of insight on this, because it's very deep and I love that. Few things to consider here. As much as I love in person and I'm dedicated to it, the trend is not towards in person. The trend is towards the metaverse, the technology, the coming together. And, you know, give us a break. We started like a year and a half ago, right? 2 years ago, maybe, in the inception of these new generation of virtual events platform. We're just at the beginning, right? So you can only imagine with sort of exponential growth that we're experiencing what's coming next. And you see tools like Disney Plus all of a sudden adding watch together parties, right? You see a commitment from large companies to the metaverse. And to be honest, I've been very skeptical towards the concept of metaverse until I started to play ping pong on my Oculus Quest. And to be honest, like I feel like I'm playing ping pong. For heaven's sake, I'm actually playing ping pong right there. So, and like when I take it off, I'm like, where am I? So you all of a sudden have this dystopian type of perception of what's happening around you. I'm very fascinated by that. I feel that technology is going to build on that. I think we're going to have much better tools very quickly because the level of investment is towards that to actually move away from that solipsistic type of experience that we're experiencing right now, where we're by ourselves kind of left alone. Into more immersion, tool-driven, interaction-driven type of environments where we can touch things, we can move things, we can actually see people in front of us. So that's going to be game changer. And that's unfortunately going to cut off on many in-person opportunities. But then again, the frustration is going to be crazy. I need to touch and hug people. I need to kind of have that feeling. You can't have that with VR. You can't have that with the metaverse. So I still think that eventually in person is going to be what we aim for.
It is pretty amazing that you bring up, you know, how much, where we are a year and a half, 2 years later, but where we can go. I know Peter and I had a podcast with someone that, you know, is associated with the gaming community too. And you brought up the gaming community and, you know, bringing all of the events together, the gaming community. I just think the sky's the limit here. And it's going to be pretty amazing to see where our events go and still somehow have some of the in-person in there too. But sorry, Peter.
No, so maybe the penultimate question here is for the CMOs in the audience, what should they be doing today when it comes to preparing themselves for the future world of hybrid events and ultimately metaverse events that they're thinking about? What should they be doing today?
Absolutely. So whenever we talk about experiences, we like to think about events as experiences. We like to think of experiences as shared experiences. That's how we call them at Hopin. We feel that component of co-creation is unique to events. An event cannot happen by someone just speaking and just broadcasting. That's called a YouTube. An event is different. It needs interaction. Even if with pre-recorded video, whatever, there's a level of interaction happening around it. And that's a game changer that projects your marketing to your next level. That starts building the community we all aim for and we all talk about. We always talk about community, like can we use community tools? And all of a sudden we have this community manager who's like trying to get people together, chasing them with emails and stuff like that. An event makes it happen for you very easily. So I think that CMOs should keep an eye on for how this technology is changing. What are the tools available right now? How does it fit with a marketing, global marketing strategy in terms of making people feel closer to your brand through year-long engagement, a year-long type of strategy, because that's what the big change is. It's not as costly, as you said, beautifully said earlier, to put on an event. You can do it easily. You can do it for free. Obviously, you know, nothing is for free. So you want to invest a little bit more there in terms of your time to design amazing events. But still, the tools are incredibly cheap these days. That's a big change that we've seen. So go back, educate yourself about the possibilities, and then rework that as a tool within your marketing strategy. Keep an eye on it and be ready for the changes that are coming. And keep an eye on all these decentralized metaverse type of communities that are popping up all over the place. They're strong. They're strong, and there's a renewed kind of vibe within the internet community, of the Web3 community. Whatever it is, even if it like pops and bursts out, the excitement is there, and that's what matters. We've been kind of laying on our tools, if not without saying anything else, for quite a while now. So there's a new sense of excitement that is coming up for what's coming next. So keep it an open mind, making sure it makes sense for you. But like, experiment with that. Now's the time to experiment. You're still in time to experiment and make mistakes. In 2-3 years time, you cannot make mistake anymore. You cannot experiment with platforms anymore. You're just going to get it right. That's what the level of expectations are going to rise very quickly to.
That's great. And I think with that, I think Kelsey has one more question. And then, believe it or not, we're almost out of time.
It may be a new year, but we're going to use the same question we always do. What advice would you give to those that are CMOs or aspiring to be one someday?
So my advice is to, if you are aspiring right now to be a CMO, it's like completely differentiate yourself for what's happening right now in the market. Do not read that article that everybody's reading and like go back to your company and say, oh, we should do this. Like, invest the time to really understand the dynamics that are driving the market right now and position yourself as unique. So as a CMO, you've got to be a master of positioning. So what's making you unique? What's your blue ocean? Discover that. And this could be a group thing. It doesn't have your own perspective on thing, but like, go away from those 3-4 resources that everybody reads. Everybody's kind of like, whenever there's an article out, I see like 10, 15 people saying the same thing all over again. That's standardizing marketing quite a lot. And it's like kind of like eating up that level of insight that is needed to actually get breakthroughs in marketing. So that research, you know, demand people understand that very well, that insight that comes to you, and all of a sudden you can create a new chapter for the company. I believe companies will be looking out for that, because you know what? Everybody's reading everything. There's nothing new in that. So your level of ability to innovate in that sense is going to make your career outstanding.
Perfect. And before we hop off, I think now would be a good time to give you the little plug to talk a little bit about Hopin and how our readers and listeners can.
I love to think about Hopin as, you know, the easiest tool that you can have to run a more complex event for your audience. So if you feel that you're using, for example, meeting technology, such as the companies we all know for events, those companies were not made for events. Those companies were made for small meetings. So if you're using traditional meeting technology for more complex events, you have an easy win right there to use Hopin, I believe, because it's so easy to use and creates immediate interaction, and your audience is going to be immediately drawn into that. It's not a complex platform. It doesn't have a million features. We don't like to play the feature battle. We like to think about experience. So think about Palm OS versus iPhone. We like to think about ourselves as the iPhone. Maybe we don't do everything that everybody does, but we do it so damn well that we like to think it's just add Hopin to any type of event, even if it's in person. Just add Hopin and you're going to have a community for your event. Or if you're thinking about long-term engagement, just add Hopin to your marketing strategy. It's going to be easy to connect people online while we figure out what's happening with the world. You want to feel closer to your community. That's the best way to use it. All the virtual tools, including StreamYard, which is my personal favorite, lifesaver for me, in March 2020 when I didn't know how to do technical production. I had OBS and different screens to put together. StreamYard like immediately makes you a producer. You have transitions that you can bring Facebook comments live online. So easy to use, incredible. And it plugs into Hopin immediately and it's start for free. So, I mean, what's there to lose? Just try it and tell me online what you think about it. Reach out to me. Always happy to have discussions about that.
Well, great. I think that wraps up our time for today. This was an awesome conversation, Julius. We really appreciated your time. Make sure to follow The Next CMO on Plana on Twitter and LinkedIn. And if you have any ideas for topics or guests, you can email us at thenextcmo@plana.com. Have a great day, everyone.
Thanks, Julius.